So this week's episode of News Dump is really going to fit to the title of the show because there's a lot going on. We're going to try to touch on as much of it as we can while also doing our best to avoid talking about that rich guy who owns a social media site. Which one? Who knows? But let's start out this week's episode with an absolutely bizarre death hoax that has captivated social media. And we should reiterate that this was apparently a hoax before we get into details of what went on, because it looks like this is either some sick prank or potentially an even more disturbing marketing stunt by the family members of this influencer who is clearly being exploited for financial gain.
Yeah, so if you've never heard of Lil Tay, congratulations, you're officially too old for this shit. But also, the videos that went viral and boosted her into instant fame were at one point inescapable, despite the gimmick being extremely simple. She was a kid, a child, who flexed her wealth online, and people somehow found that unique. She's doing the rap video lifestyle, but she's
holding up the bills on her ears and having the fancy cars and all that kind of stuff.
Two surefire ways of comedy: have a little kid act like an adult, or have an old person act like a kid. Six Flags Magic Mountain.
Both are probably being exploited depending on their ages.
That's right.
Yeah, that's elder abuse.
Also, this Tay thing, it like lasted all of like I think 2 months, maybe.
And years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a blip on, and a lot was going on at the time, too.
We're all very busy.
Anyway, the behind-the-scenes version of her rise, however, the rise to social media fame, it seems far more in line with the way that, child actors have been exploited by family members for decades now, or more recently, just family vloggers and that whole world that is weird and gross.
We are entering the time frame where those children are starting to put out interviews where they're like, I didn't agree to any of this.
Yeah, putting your children on camera for the world to see is...
For their entire lives.
It's ethically murky, and that's the best way of saying it. It's bad. You shouldn't do it. But yeah, the whole thing, the whole image she projected was fake. The money, the houses, the cars, everything. And it's not like Lil Tay produced, filmed, and edited the videos all by herself. Her family, more specifically her mom and her brother, appear to have been the ones behind everything and pushing for her to continue her trajectory after the original video went viral. Whether or not she was a willing participant in all this is a pointless argument, because again, she was a child. I think she was like 9 at the time.
Yeah, willing is not the correct term.
Like,
this is just, hey, do this. This will be funny. It'll get some views.
Like, if you're even just like a year older than a 9-year-old, you can go up to them on the playground and just tell them to say things and they'll do it.
Yeah. But it was not that it wasn't entirely obvious, but the original videos, which portray her as the quote, youngest flexer of the century, were all completely fabricated. And nearly every aspect of the videos was made possible through her mother's job as a realtor in Vancouver, British Columbia. Now, this was a scandal in and of itself back in 2018 when it was discovered that the videos were filmed inside her mother's clients' homes using their property, cash that was apparently borrowed from her employer, and using cars as props that were owned by her boss, including one where Tay kicks it.
I mean, it's pretty brilliant. Use what you got.
Yeah, so this quickly resulted in her mom being fired from the real estate company, which unfortunately for Lil Tay, freed up a bunch of her time to focus on her daughter's social media career.
It's okay. This is my job now.
Yeah. I'm a
mom-fluencer.
Yeah. According to reports, her mom and dad separated. Her mom and her brother moved down to Hollywood, and they got started with collabs and other activities that mirror the trajectory of child actors. The family had a clear financial dependence on her success, at least for the short window that it existed. So they were going to try to ride this viral fame as long as possible.
Yeah, and surely this was an idea with a lot of staying power.
Yeah, and very healthy for a growing child to participate in.
So yeah, there's conflicting reports about the dad, with some saying that he was also trying to make money off his daughter's fame, and others claiming that he was fighting to regain custody of his daughter so that he could save her from the continued exploitation at the hands of her mom. What does seem clear, though, is that they were separated, and her mother and brother were in charge of her career and social media accounts. Anyway, that all led to this week, when news broke that Lil Tay had passed away. Amidst other cryptic social media posts, including one on her YouTube channel, which apparently read, "Help me." Also, they said the brother died too.
Yeah.
It was, a statement on her official Instagram page announced that her and her brother had both passed away. And this post was spread across social media and the news media, becoming more believable in the process.
Yeah, I mean, no, look.
I didn't see it on Instagram. I saw it on
people.com. Yeah.
Because, yeah, major outlets were seemingly confirming it just by reporting that the statement existed. Adding fuel to the fire was the fact that her father and management responded in the worst way possible by essentially saying that no one could confirm nor deny whether the news was true.
That's exactly the type of statement that you say when presumably your daughter is missing and or deceased.
Yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny. I guess you'll have to stay tuned.
Yeah.
But yeah, in retrospect, it appears as though he literally couldn't say either way because he was hundreds of miles away in Canada and finding out about this same way and at the same time as everyone else. So yeah, that kind of sucks. Regardless of everything else about this guy, that would be distressing. But yeah, just an odd way to make a statement about your child's well-being.
I cannot confirm nor deny. It seems like you could just say,
we're looking into this.
I'm as shocked as everyone else. We're trying to figure out what's going on. Uh-huh. Not, we cannot confirm nor deny. It is just a strange way to respond. And quite literally just added fuel to the already blazing fire, where it's just a bunch of these outlets just being like, it appears as though Lil Tay has passed away. Without even, eventually the Vancouver PD and LAPD were contacted and apparently there was no report of a missing person or a deceased person, so.
I mean, to be fair, most of the times when someone's social media account says they're dead, it's true.
It's usually, yeah.
Because why would you lie about that?
Yeah, anyways, Tay is alive, according to multiple sources, I guess. And the claim is that this was all just a big misunderstanding because her accounts were hacked or something. Which is still very odd, because this was a massive news story, even breaking out of the typical online news cycle and spilling into more mainstream sources over the past day or two. Now, it seems weird that no one in the family, including her brother, who was also reported dead, wouldn't have immediately gone public with the information that this was just some sick joke by a deranged hacker. Like, even if you don't have access to Tay's account, if you're the brother, I'm assuming that you have an account of your own, you can be like, no, actually, I'm not dead. Someone is starting a horrific rumor about my family. Anyways, in a statement provided to TMZ from, I guess, Tay's family, she tells TMZ, I want to make it clear that my brother and I are safe and alive, but I'm completely heartbroken and struggling to even find the right words to say. It's been a very traumatizing 24 hours. All day yesterday, I was bombarded with endless, heartbreaking, and tearful phone calls from loved ones, all while trying to sort out this mess.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see how that would be extremely distressing.
But did a 14-year-old even write that?
I don't know. That's what's mysterious about all this.
If I had to guess, this was the work of the parents and or the brother. Like, it's been a couple of years, time to kickstart Lil Tay's career.
It
and
seems like that, but that would be evil.
If you know anything about it, being an online influencer, like, if you go away for even just a couple of weeks, like, it's really hard to get that viral momentum back. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we're going to say that she's dead, so everyone remembers her, and she's in the news cycle, and then we'll be like, oh, shit, we were hacked. But anyway,
it's the resurrection.
While you're here, why don't you come and watch this new music video we got for you?
They couldn't even make it 3 days like Jesus Christ.
I know.
So I don't know what to believe about this, because both sides are the most horrific answer. Either a hacker used a child's social media account to claim that you would assume her brother and her were murdered, because that's what it sounded like, or the family did this as a publicity stunt, which is insane.
Well, yeah, they're parents of online influencer children. It's what they're like. It's what they do.
So, yeah, that's the Lil Tay story that dominated the news this week, and while the whole story is very odd, it might just be as simple as a hacked account and the internet carrying the weight of a bizarre death hoax and a conspiracy theory faster than the truth could get out there. I mean, it could just be that simple. That's still not great, but you could see how the internet does get carried away with things. And then people start reporting on it as if it's fact because they can rely on, like, one of the biggest ones is like people.com.
Yeah.
Which is like, why would they lie about this? And
they're people.com. They know everything about people.
Yeah.
We got all the people news.
Yeah. Either way, we really hope this kid finds some way to have a normal, well-adjusted life going forward. But I don't know.
My favorite part of this, like, 24-hour cycle was the people who were like, you know, I was feeling bad for this girl until I found out she said the N-word when she was 9. Now I don't care anymore. I was like, wait, what? You think a child who was clearly coerced into saying the N-word deserved to die? Interesting.
Reporting at the time, in the old ancient days of 2018, indicated that her older brother coerced her into saying all
of the lines. Doesn't matter.
People online are insane.
Yeah, no, it's that's why Twitter's still the number one take factory. You can't find takes like that on Threads, on Blue Sky.
And we'll get to why Twitter is still king in the mockery department in a second, because we go into the riverboat brawl.
Oh, baby.
But with the Tay story out of the way, let's get rid of some of the tension in the room with a video of Mitch McConnell being booed and heckled just days after his very strange, still unexplained issue during a meeting with the press where he completely froze up and appeared to disassociate. In the new clip, McConnell is speaking at an event called the Fancy Farm Picnic.
What?
And his speech is completely drowned out by boos and chants begging him to retire. Here, take a look. Apparently, this fancy farm picnic thing is described as a bipartisan fun event where it's apparently acceptable, if not encouraged, to just heckle the people speaking relentlessly.
Okay.
Which is odd, but it is, you know, it's Kentucky we're talking about. Anything goes. Either way, it's at least somewhat satisfying to see Mitch being heckled on his home turf. And not for nothing, on the other side of the aisle, Dianne Feinstein, who is 90 years old.
She's a ghoul.
And still participating in our government, also faced some issues this week. Damn near, not even a week can go by without either of these two getting into some kind of old person trouble.
I'm convinced there's gotta be, I'm sure if this were true, someone would have noticed by now, but is there some clause in like the Senate pension plan where like if you die in office, like your family gets paid double or some shit? That's the only reason I can think of for why this old fucking ghost of a woman is still
there's probably something
the
like
Senate.
The Santa Claus, where whoever was closest when she dies has to take over the position.
It might be something like that. Yeah. I'll have to ask the parliamentarian.
Yeah, anyways, she tripped and fell in her home, did a little tumble. Why is she still in office?
Did she have her life alert on?
Hopefully. Please, we are just begging both parties at this point. Force these people out of their positions. This is no good for anyone, and it's also difficult to watch.
We can do like a Midsummer thing with it.
But they both show up bruised all the time. It is not fun to watch.
FBI, that was a joke about Midsummer. Never mind. You haven't seen the movie.
No.
But we should do something like that.
No. We should just let them enjoy their remaining years.
Anyway, we should probably try to summarize. Now, what was easily the most viral story of the entire week before Lil Tay died and was
Came
resurrected.
Back to life,
And that was the Montgomery Melee, aka the Malice in Montgomery, which was an argument that started between a bunch of white boaters who illegally docked their boat in a spot reserved for a riverboat cruise and the captain of that riverboat. And there are multiple angles of videos, dozens of eyewitness accounts, and hundreds, if not thousands, of memes, videos, play-by-play analysis, and more that spawned from this fight. Most of all, a new appreciation of the humble folding chair.
Yeah.
But, which, I don't know if this is true, but people were sharing that it was invented by a black man, which...
Perfect.
If I don't know if that was just memes, but that would be...
Yeah,
a cherry on
great.
Top. But yeah, to sum all this up, basically a bunch of white dudes started harassing a black riverboat captain who demanded that they move their illegally docked pontoon boat because his cruise, filled with guests, was unable to dock for nearly an hour. Things got heated, and before long, it turned violent, with the white guys ganging up on the lone black riverboat captain. It escalated from there with at least one guy jumping off the riverboat and swimming faster than an orca over to shore to help the defenseless man being ganged up by this flock, this brood of whites.
Yeah. Now, after the riverboat was able to dock, the fight continued with co-workers and cruise attendees joining in on the fight alongside the friends and family of the pontoon boat until it was a literal waterside brawl that included the deployment of folding chairs as weapons in a scene straight out of the WWE. Now, obviously, I mean, I wish we could show this footage. It has been grabbed up by every viral hog
viral
or whatever.
The hog is hogging that footage.
It's been licensed out to all these companies. Plus, I mean, it is violent content. YouTube would probably hit us with that. But we can't show you. Chances are, though, you've already seen it. And if you haven't, there will be links in the description.
Yeah, the footage from the boat is actually, like, some of the best footage. It explains what happened best because...
Yeah, it shows the lead up to the
ball. Well, everyone on the boat is watching all of this take place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say at least half the people on the boat are black Southerners.
Mm-hmm.
And Montgomery itself, you know, just the whole South. Sherman should have gone a little further, but it still stands to this day. And there's a lot of negative history there. And so
specifically with these docks.
Yeah,
we'll get to it. Yeah. But yeah.
So.
Anyways, as a follow-up for all of this, several arrest warrants were filed. And according to local outlet NBC5, Montgomery Mayor Stephen Reed released a statement Sunday afternoon crediting police officers for acting quickly to detain several reckless individuals for attacking a man who was doing his job. Warrants are being signed and justice will be served, Reed said. This was an unfortunate incident which never should have occurred. As our police department investigates these intolerable actions, we should not become desensitized to violence of any kind in our community. Those who choose violent actions will be held accountable by our criminal justice system.
But if you want the best rundown of exactly what happened and the hilarious responses in the form of memes, videos, and everything else, journalist and senior editor of HuffPost, Philip Lewis, provided a constantly updated and complete rundown of the whole story, Black Twitter's response to all of it, and of course all the memes and jokes that were spawned.
Mm-hmm.
We will link to his lengthy, informative, and in some cases very funny Substack article in the description below, but he hits every note regarding this story, including providing information about the history of the domestic slave trade related directly to the almost exact spot where the brawl took place,
mm-hmm.
all while effortlessly weaving in and out of comedic takes and relevant memes associated with
it. It's a wild read.
It's great writing. You should go read the entire article right now if you somehow missed this whole saga because, there's a lot to it, a lot of angles, and it was, even a day later, it was still hard to piece together what happened. When I originally saw it, I think it was like Saturday night, all I saw was like lone black man beat up by like six white dudes, and I was like, oh God, this is horrible. And I didn't see the rest of it until like the next day via the memes. And I was like, oh, this is actually, wow.
I like the video.
It's not what I was expecting.
Everyone training with folding chairs.
Yeah.
And the one guy holding it on his side like an AR-15.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But,
these fucking whites, they beat up this guy and then they just like went back to their boat and were like sitting there.
Nope. Nothing like, bad is going to happen.
I think one of them fled the scene.
Yeah.
There's video of that, but like the rest of them, they were just sitting in the boat that needed to move, and were surprised when a ship full of people who were late because they'd been stuck just right outside the docks for like
very
an hour,
frustratingly stuck,
like just came up to them and started pulling
and
them
just
off the
watched
boat.
Their co-captain get beat up by all these. Yeah,
what
so,
did you think was gonna happen, dumb bitch?
But speaking of boat news. We have more boat news for you because we are your official source for all things aquatic.
We love our big, beautiful boaters.
And uh-oh, some big boats are stuck once again.
Ooh.
And this might result in yet another assault on our planet's unbelievably delicate supply chain because the Panama Canal is drier than Ben Shapiro's wife.
Oh no.
Causing a pileup of over 150 vessels, according to CNBC. And for clarity, CNBC did not make the joke about Ben Shapiro's wife. They're just reporting on the actual story. But here's more from their reporting. The number of vessels waiting to cross the Panama Canal has reached 154, and slots for carriers to book passage are being reduced in an effort to manage congestion caused by ongoing drought conditions that have roiled the major shipping gateway since the spring. The current wait time to cross the canal is now around 21 days.
The fuck? We're going to Fitzcarraldo this shit. Just carry the boat.
It's, as you, I'm sure, hopefully are all aware, major shipping thoroughfare.
Yeah, it's also, but what did they think was going to happen? You made a river out of stairs.
God did not want this here.
Yeah, this is unnatural. This river is stairs.
And now, because of climate change, you will suffer the consequences. Oops, drought. What are you going to do? The massive pileup is a result of water conservation measures the Panama Canal Authority deployed in late July due to drought.
But hey, the good thing is the end game with the climate change is we won't need a Panama Canal. That'll just be a canal.
Yeah. We will launch all of the shipping goods and services over with a trebuchet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the reporting continues. They add that when the daily capacity is reduced, ships lacking reservations are compelled to wait in line. You can show up to the Panama Canal without reservations?
Oops.
What the fuck?
You can't even show up to Disney without reservations. You can just pull up to the Panama Canal and
say,
hey,
sick.
Let me through.
I would love to just take a ride on the Panama Canal.
I think you can in a cruise ship, although could you imagine being, if there are cruise ships
It is an
stuck
insane
right
marvel of engineering.
Absolutely.
Like, I didn't think you could just show up and be like, hey, you got... Got any tables for me in there?
Not anymore. Not anymore.
The Panama Canal Authority tells CNBC 38% of ships waiting have reservations. The remaining 62% of ships do not, which means they have to wait for the vessels with reservations to proceed across the canal. Alan Baer, CEO of logistics company OLUSA, told CNBC that shippers may have to start looking at other routes. What? What other routes?
well, buddy.
With the increasing difficulty of reaching the U.S. East Coast via the Panama Canal, importers may be looking at vessels transiting the Suez, Baer said.
Ooh, the Suez Canal? Well, that sounds familiar.
I knew at least one boat in particular that has the chance to do the funniest thing possible right now.
Ever given, you have been activated.
But also, like, if the boat... if they're down...
That's a very far distance.
Yeah, they're down here in the Suez... I'm like, okay.
There's a reason that canal was the Horn of South America, like one of the most violent. Have you seen the videos of the ships that have to navigate it anyway?
Yeah,
it's unruly.
It's not cool.
Built that canal for a reason, and now it is apparently becoming inoperable.
And it's like the coast of Namibia. The coast of Namibia is just like the most treacherous piece of ocean in the world. Like the sea is just covered in like shipwrecks because like just every ship that passes through there over the last like 200 years has just gotten swept onto the shore.
Yeah.
And it's like the entire country's fucking desert and there's just lions like prowling. So like even if you survive a shipwreck and get marooned, like you're fucked. You're in the middle of nowhere. There's lions prowling. So that Suez, it came in pretty clutch. But
not when a boat goes sideways, though. Mm-hmm. Imagine both of these both of these get blocked. It's going to be bad times. But we do have more news for you coming up in just a second. But first, we know at least two companies who aren't having problems with their supply chain. And that's because they are today's sponsors, starting with a company that doesn't need a supply chain, Mint Mobile. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by big wireless providers, if we have learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when you hear that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless starting at just $15 a month, you think, well, what's the catch? But after using the service, it all makes sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they're the first company to sell wireless service online only. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. And as you'll remember, I popped in a SIM card on my trip to New York last month, couldn't tell the difference between my two providers, and I had fast, consistent service anywhere I went, especially when it counted most, during a torrential downpour at the hot dog eating contest.
Yeah, who are you gonna call? For anyone who hates...
Joey Chestnut!
For anyone who hates their phone bill, Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for just $15 a month. Mint Mobile gives you the best rate whether you're buying for one or a family. And at Mint, families start at just two lines. All plans come with unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Switch to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/newsdump. That's mintmobile.com/newsdump. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/newsdump.
This episode is also brought to you by Factor. With the busy fall season just around the corner, you might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals for jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you fuel up fast with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle. Too busy with your end-of-summer goals to cook, but want to make sure you're still eating well? With Factor, skip the extra trip to the grocery store and skip the chopping, the prepping, and the cleaning up too, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality that you need.
Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy, then get back to crushing your goals. Mm-hmm. Refresh your healthy habits without missing a beat. Choose from 34-plus weekly flavor-packed, dietitian-approved meals ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Level up with gourmet-plus options prepared to perfection by chefs and ready to eat in record time. Treat yourself to upscale meals with premium ingredients like broccolini, leeks, truffle butter, and asparagus. Looking for calorie-conscious options ahead of the busy season? Try delicious, dietitian-approved, calorie-smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving.
With Factor, you can rest assured you're making a sustainable choice. They offset 100% of their delivery emissions, source 100% renewable electricity for their production sites and offices, and feature sustainably sourced seafood in their meals. This August, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered right to your door, ready in just 2 minutes. No prep. No mess. Head to factormeals.com/newsdump50 and use code newsdump50 to get 50% off. That is code newsdump50 at factormeals.com/newsdump50 to get 50% off. Woo!
All right, back into the news now. And there's a few updates regarding Donald Trump's criminal activities that we should probably bring you up to speed on, starting with a previously secret memo. Shh. That seems like it pretty clearly lays out the intent that Trump and his advisors had in regards to overturning the results of the 2020 election, mm-hmm. which is illegal.
Yes.
So a Trump ally and one of the co-conspirators from his most recent indictment, a lawyer named Kenneth Chesbro, sketched out a memo that he himself acknowledged would be a bold, controversial strategy that the Supreme Court would likely reject. And it's just one part of this overall indictment, but again, it shows the intention of Trump and his allies. They knew that Trump had lost the election fairly, but were frantically trying to come up with ways to keep Trump in power. Mm-hmm. Here's the New York Times, who got their hands on a copy of the memo.
Even if the plan did not ultimately pass legal muster at the highest level, Mr. Chesbro argued that it would achieve two goals. It would focus attention on claims of voter fraud and, quote, buy the Trump campaign more time to win litigation that would deprive Biden of electoral votes and or add to Trump's column. The memo had been a missing piece in the public record of how Mr. Trump's allies developed their strategy to overturn Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s victory. In mid-December, the false Trump electors could go through the motions of voting as if they had the authority to do so. Then, on January 6, 2021, Vice President Mike Pence could unilaterally count those slates of votes, rather than the official and certified ones for Mr. Biden. While the basic plan itself was already known, the document, described by prosecutors as the fraudulent elector memo, provides new details about how it originated and was discussed behind the scenes. Among those details is Mr. Chesbro's proposed messaging strategy to explain why pro-Trump electors were meeting in states where Mr. Biden was declared the winner. The campaign would present that step as a routine measure that is necessary to ensure that the correct electoral slate could be counted by Congress if courts or legislatures later concluded that Mr. Trump had actually won those states.
Would this plan ever have actually worked, though? It's just
even by his own admission, it seems like no, this was going to get shot down by the Supreme Court.
This all seems very silly.
This was them.
This is like grabbing the giant hammer in like the halls of Parliament, and it's just like now I'm Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Well,
it only served to throw more questions onto the validity of it and presumably extend the timeline between Trump leaving office and Biden being sworn in, so that they could come up with anything else. But yeah, this whole thing, as we've seen, is a bunch of fake electorates acting as though they were going there and putting in their votes for Donald Trump when they had no business doing that.
Yeah, I just don't see how this would have, I mean, I guess.
They were just trying to trick people, like, hey.
Like the hardcore Trump people, of course, would have seen that and been like, okay, it's official, Trump's president. But like, the legal system would have been like, no, I don't think so.
But you had the angriest and loudest people believing that because clearly these fake electorates aren't fake and they put in their votes for Donald Trump. So try that in a small town.
Anyway, quote, I believe that what can be achieved on January 6th is not simply to keep Biden below 270 electoral votes, Mr. Chesbro wrote in the newly disclosed memo. It seems feasible that the vote count can be conducted so that at no point will Trump be behind in the electoral vote count unless and until Biden can obtain a favorable decision from the Supreme Court upholding the Electoral Count Act as constitutional or otherwise recognizing the power of Congress and not the President of the Senate to count the votes. The false elector scheme was perhaps the most sprawling of Mr. Trump's various efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. It involved lawyers working on his campaign's behalf across seven states, dozens of electors willing to claim that Mr. Trump, not Mr. Biden, had won their states, and open resistance from some of those potential electors that the plan could be illegal or even appear treasonous. In the end, it became the cornerstone of the indictment against Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
What a way to go out.
Wild. And if for some reason you needed further proof that the election lies Trump has spread and continues to spread to this day are complete bullshit, you have to see this incredible clip from a recent appearance on the right-wing news outlet Newsmax, where the host, despite the organization's clear affinity for Trump, has to add a disclaimer to the end of an interview with Donald Trump, acknowledging that Trump's voter fraud claims are a total fabrication, completely made up.
We made that one up.
He made it up. Just here, watch.
Doing a fantastic job.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you. All right, folks, now just a note, Newsmax has accepted the election results as legal and final.
So, great stuff, and clearly something that they are being forced to do because of the numerous high-dollar lawsuits they're facing for their assistance in spreading the stolen election narrative. We have to just come out and say that entire interview, don't believe a word of it, because we are legally liable if you do.
Also, very cool that he's definitely going to be the nominee again. So
yeah, hit the latest poll
numbers. So they're already just like, well, fuck. I guess we're going with this guy.
What's crazy to me is that in the latest poll numbers, not that Trump is winning, that's believable, but he's up by such a large margin. And the second place candidate is Vivek Ramaswamy. And the third is Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, it is what it is, I guess. It's fucking weird.
It is. I don't know what's going to happen, but
it should be. I hope we at least get a couple debates.
That would be.
This lawsuit, they're trying to schedule it for this coming January.
Yeah.
So that will be right in like the peak of like primary season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of three, potentially four major criminal suits that he'll be involved in. So should be very exciting.
Again, all unprecedented, living through history as it's being written. And not a fun part of history, but history nonetheless.
Anyway, it's time now to talk about Twitter, or sorry, X. Actually, we're sorry for even mentioning it, but it's hard for us to ignore Elon Musk and his platform when it refuses to stay out of our feeds. In this latest story, Twitter was apparently fined $350,000 for failing to turn over Trump's data to the special counsel investigating the events leading up to the insurrection, among other things. Here's more from the Washington Post. A lower court judge, Beryl A. Howell, ruled in March that Twitter, now renamed X, had to comply with a sealed search warrant requested by the special counsel and pay $350,000 for missing a court-ordered deadline by 3 days. The filing also reveals that Howell had found reason to believe that should the search warrant be made public, Trump might engage in obstructive conduct or flee prosecution.
What would give you that idea?
Attorneys for Twitter did not oppose the search warrant, but argued that a gag order preventing the company from alerting Trump to the search violated the First Amendment.
And it continues, the company argued that it should not have to hand over the records until that issue was resolved. Howell sided with the government, finding Twitter in contempt February 7th for failing to comply with the search warrant. She gave Twitter until 5 p.m. to produce the records, with sanctions of $50,000 per day to double every day that Twitter did not comply. Twitter produced the records 3 days later. The ruling does not specify what was turned over, but a subpoena could cover draft tweets and direct messages, as well as information on who had access to the account. The grand jury indictment against Trump handed down this month includes references to 18 of Trump's tweets, including 7 from the day of January 6th. In those messages, Trump spread false fraud claims, attacked officials who tried to correct the record, rallied supporters to Washington for January 6th, and pressured Pence to help overturn the election results.
Hey, $350,000, that's nothing. They got a lot of money down at X.
And that's why they're auctioning off all of their...
It's pennies to them.
Twitter supplies. I don't mention it in today's episode because it is legitimately, like, violent posts. But the guy that got taken out by the FBI for threatening the president and other officials... Truth Social handed over his posts to the FBI specifically. So,
damn.
Lest anyone on Truth Social think that they're on the ultimate free speech platform where they can say whatever they want without consequence.
More like narc social.
That guy was he seemed very intentional with what he was posting and saying.
Well, dick shitter part two. All bark and very little bite. I didn't even know they sold triple XL ghillie suits.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, his posts were...
Hey, FBI, why don't you come try that in a small town? Okay. Dead.
His posts are outrageous.
Just literally,
if you haven't seen them, just
literally
go,
making
go
like threats against
direct
threats against people's lives. And I love.
And then after getting approached by the FBI in question,
hey,
continued to do that.
Hey, buddy, you got to cut that out.
You are under investigation.
And so the FBI showed up at his house,
and he had a gun on him.
He started shooting at him, so they killed him. All the right-wing losers are like, well, why didn't they murder Kathy Griffin when she did that photo shoot with the mannequin of Trump's head? And it's like, okay, well, first of all, she did get, like, put on a fucking no-fly list and had to get, like, interviewed a bunch by, like, the FBI and Secret Service. But the key difference is she didn't pull a gun on them and try to shoot them when they came to her house.
Yeah.
That's the trick.
Yeah.
When law enforcement comes to your house to talk to you about things you said online, don't fire a gun at them, and you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah. But in other Twitter news, there's not really much more we can add to what we're about to show you, but you simply have to see the complete disconnect from reality on display from Twitter CEO Linda Yaccarino in an interview with CNBC earlier this week. It's that image of everything's fine, but there's just chaos in the background. Take a look.
By all objective metrics, X is a much healthier and safer platform than it was a year ago. Since acquisitions, we have built brand safety and content moderation tools that have never existed before at this company.
I hope she's being paid well. I hope she's being properly compensated for what I would consider she is doing an amazing job, not at being a CEO, but at filling the role that Elon hired her for, which is just providing a sheen of competence to this whole operation.
Yeah.
Because she is doing a masterful job at, telling everyone the sky is purple.
Yeah, it is. She is either high on her own supply or willfully misrepresenting what is happening behind the scenes.
She's doing a great job. She's the best PR person I've ever seen out there in the wild. Like, she is damn good at her job.
I don't know.
It's unfortunate that her skills are being put to this use because if I ever need someone to, clean up my name,
I mean,
get my social standing up, I'm going to hire Linda Yaccarino.
In the sense that, like, she can tell a direct lie without flinching.
Yeah.
Without flinching, I guess.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm not making a moral judgment here. I'm saying she is doing a pretty good job at the job that she was hired for.
Legitimately lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, while it's unfortunate that Twitter has turned into such a massive pile of shit, it still is undefeated when it comes to keeping the world engaged and making fun of each other, and nothing proved that point better than the recent posts from residents of Japan who were so upset with all the Barbenheimer jokes that they decided to give Americans a taste of their own medicine. So they started photoshopping the Barbie logo over images of 9/11.
Yeah, the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Oh, Japan. Yeah, they were clearly unaware of the fact that most online brain social media users in this country consider 9/11 fair game for mockery, and have since 9/12, pretty much.
Yeah.
They've been making memes related to 9/11 for well over a decade now, well over two decades in some corners of the internet. So it was basically users from Japan saying, well, how do you like it? And Americans responding, oh, we like it very much. The memes are funny. Yeah. Good stuff. You got any more of that?
I think definitely not the first, but the first that I can remember, it's like 2000, it had to be 2006 or seven. And it was Hulk Hogan going Hulkamania on the Twin Towers.
Yeah. Yeah, this is how we cope in America.
Yes.
Through comedy. 10 layers of irony.
Yes.
Also, I do love that, Warner Brothers, they were put into an awkward position because apparently some of their official accounts were engaging in this Barbenheimer marketing blitz. Mm-hmm. This is basically the opposite of what McDonald's did when the Grimace Shake stuff was going viral.
We're just going to stay on the side and let this happen and enjoy the free publicity, but not touch it.
I don't know anything about that.
Because this is clearly not great for our brand, acknowledging that the shakes will kill you.
No, Warner Brothers leaned into it.
They're like, hey, look, people are really having fun with this, combining a toy doll with one of the most horrific atrocities that the planet has ever experienced.
Literally an apocalyptic atrocity.
Yeah.
So, apparently some WB accounts, they decided to get in on the Barbenheimer fun, and it really, really pissed off people in Japan.
Justifiably.
And others internally. So, they were forced to issue an apology. The funniest thing about this is that Universal, who released Oppenheimer, very wisely was like, we are not fucking touching that shit. We're not trying to have fun with promoting our
Oppenheimer. This is a serious movie.
No. The internet's going to have their jokes and their memes, but we are not directly...
Yes.
Because that's the message of Oppenheimer is... Robert Oppenheimer, he would have been like, this ad campaign seems like a great way to promote our project. Let's get in on this Barbenheimer thing. And then he sees the posts through the window and they're burning his eyes.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh God, what have I done?
Yeah. I have become death, destroyer of memes.
Yeah. So, here's Variety. The Warner Brothers Film Group in the U.S. has made a public apology about social media activity concerning the Barbenheimer meme that has caused major offense in Japan. Warner Brothers regrets its recent insensitive social media engagement. The studio offers a sincere apology, the company said in a statement emailed to Variety on Tuesday. The move follows criticism of Warner by members of the public in Japan, the start of an online petition against the studio, and an unusual maneuver by the Japanese distribution arm of Warner. Warner Brothers Japan on Monday posted a statement on its official Japanese language Barbie Twitter account criticizing the studio's U.S. branch for feeding into the Barbenheimer craze on social media. The Barbie U.S. Twitter account has positively interacted with some fan posts about Barbenheimer, which refers to the dual summer releases of Universal's Oppenheimer and Warner Brothers' Barbie movies.
Yeah.
David Zaslav needs to go over to Tokyo and do the deepest bow. He needs to get fully horizontal.
Mm-hmm. That's right. No one will be happy until that happens.
David Zaslav, get on that
and
get on that plane.
Wearing a pink suit while he does it.
That's right.
Yeah.
When this whole thing was going on, I was like, has Oppenheimer come out in Japan? Will it come out? And there is
there's no plan
there's
for
no
it.
Release plan for it, because I guess the big problem is like the entire summer is full of like really important like holidays, like anniversary holidays related to World War II.
And right now is the time that it happened. It was like August 5th, 19.
Yeah, it's like a national period of mourning. Like,
yes.
Like we can't fucking release this movie.
You can't release it the day that it was bombed.
Yeah. So, but it is resulting in a lot of people in Japan doing the same thing a lot of people in America did, which is assuming the absolute worst about this movie when, actually seeing it would...
It's just a case study of the person.
I heard the movies about like how the atomic bomb was good and Robert Oppenheimer was a very good man for inventing it.
Uh-huh.
No. But they can't, they don't know. They don't have the movie yet.
Yeah, it's maybe they'll release it during the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Was it November? Fast approaching.
December, I think.
December, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, finally, tonight.
No, November was when JFK got shot, which is mentioned in the Oppenheimer movie. Fellow by the name of Kennedy.
Yeah, and that's when I was like, I understood that reference.
He said the word.
Easter egg for all the
Kennedy heads out there. Yeah, or lack thereof.
But finally, today, we will leave you with the crime of the century, or at least when it comes to tabletop gaming, because over $300,000 worth of Magic the Gathering cards were stolen in broad daylight at the Gen Con Tabletop Expo in Indiana last week. And the thieves behind this plot completed their mission by literally just walking away with pallets of the carts.
It was the easiest crime I ever committed. I walked away with $500,000 worth of trading cards.
I mean, no one in that building can run even a quarter mile without collapsing trying to get this, oxygen, so.
You joke, but this is actually just the I belong here,
yeah.
I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing kind of method that works in so yeah. many scenarios.
Yeah, you wear enough lanyards and bracelets.
Yeah, like, no one's gonna question you because nobody cares. So and they just assume that you're there doing your job.
Here's Insider. According to police, the two people took a pallet jack from the venue where Gen Con was being held and loaded it with $300,000 worth of gaming cards before walking with it out of the venue. The police department's statement was accompanied by five photos of the two suspects, one of which showed the two people pulling a dolly with several boxes stacked on top of it. Pastimes Comics and Games, the retailer which the cards were stolen from, said on Facebook that most of the cards stolen were Commander Masters set and collector boosters. The card sets typically sell at retail for $300 to $400 and usually contain multiple rare cards, Kotaku reported.
Whoo!
When I first saw this, I was like, I mean, that could just be like five cards, just five cards.
Yeah.
Because there are cards that expensive.
Yeah, Post Malone owns all of them.
But like stealing just full pallets, that's pretty wild.
Now they have to sort through all of it. There's so much work. Yeah, to sort through all of it.
Also, they already found the one ring.
Yeah.
Post Malone has it.
Speaking of nerdy shit, have you tried Baldur's Gate 3 yet?
No.
I feel like you would actually like it because you didn't like Diablo. This is more like a, do you ever play XCOM?
Yeah, XCOM is like my favorite game.
Okay, then you'll like, this is all turn-based and very story-driven.
You have my attention.
So I'm not as huge of a fan. I played Divinity Original Sin and it's like, look, I'm not trying to offend anyone. I'm just more of an action RPG guy. I love just the mindless mechanics of Diablo, but.
I like games that I don't
sit and think.
I don't have to pause. I can just leave the game running and come back like an hour later.
So I did find myself doing that with Baldur's Gate, which I'm really trying and it's working. I'm trying very hard to get over the turn-based mechanics and really enjoy it. Yeah. And so far I've been able to do that and I'm very proud of myself for that.
Okay.
But I am enjoying the fact that I'll do something and then I'll sit back and go, all right, let me try to figure this out.
Yeah, it's the best.
And I'll get up and walk away and I'll do something and I'll come back and be like, all right. And I've actually shut the game down, and 2 hours later, I came back and turned it on. I was like, okay, I know what I'm gonna do here.
Yeah, turn-based games are the best. You can watch fucking YouTube videos while you're playing. Like, you can have a meal. It's I'm too old for this constant real-time gaming.
Too much
attention it requires.
It's already the third biggest game in Steam history. And
it's because there's naked people in it.
Yeah, they did fix a glitch apparently where your dong would hang out of your armor and flop around. So they had to patch that, but unfortunately. But right at the beginning, it's like, are you okay with nudity? But I think that you might like it, despite it being a fantasy thing.
I'll consider it.
It's, at the very least, a beautiful game.
I don't have anything against fantasy.
And so far, it's actually pretty funny. The writing's pretty funny from what I've experienced so far. So maybe
a joke!
Yeah. And the decisions, I've played two different characters so far, the beginning of two, and the choices actually matter. I made completely different choices, and it really does affect everything that happens. One guy turned into a robot because I tried to kill him.
There's robots?
Strange.
What the fuck?
Anyways, Elliot's going to try Baldur's Gate 3. Can you believe it?
Yeah, we'll see.
Remember to like the video. Hit the like button right now. Do it. And be sure to watch our most recent videos. If you haven't had enough of our ongoing Musk X Twitter coverage, boy, do we have an episode for you from earlier in the week. But please stay tuned because we do have weekly weird news coming right up for you. And then you'll have something to watch all weekend. Enjoy that. Watch our most recent videos. Like the video. Subscribe. And we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.